Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Welcome back to Your Kids Don't Suck, and we are still just doing our thing every 2 weeks, and we always find something incredible to get into because this is a topic, non-coercive collaborative parenting, never gets tiring. It's a whole field of study. It's a whole world of exploration, and our children keep us in the work. So thank you for those who are following along, and today we have a guest. Her name is Alessandra Rodriguez, and I met her during one of my parent support groups. So I do these parent support groups on Zoom, and that's all because of TikTok. That's the reason I have these groups, is because the whole community was birthed from my videos. And anyway, I met her there with her husband. They both took it together. And, you know, there's all these incredible parents who are so open to learning. They all bring their vulnerability and their challenges to the group. But Alessandra was like, we have a lot of children and we're just going to go for it. We're going to like really do non-coercive as much as I possibly can. And that's really rare because a lot of people do it in little increments over a long period of time, which is fine. But some people go, I can't control my kids anymore. I'm going to let go and see what happens. And that was you, Alessandra, I think. Yeah. I mean, I want you to tell me more about how far into it you are. I don't totally know. So
yeah,
welcome.
So thank you guys so much for having me. Yeah, I actually originally found Rathia through TikTok, one of her videos, but it really had impacted me. So whenever I saw the support group, I reached out and I was like, man, I need to be a part of this and I need to figure this out because the blended family dynamic that we have is just absolutely insane. Everything that we have going on right now, it's not working. And it's toxic and it's destroying our kids. It's destroying our relationships with our kids. And we need to figure this out and we need to figure it out fast. So we jumped into the class and I was just like, okay, the issue is like, if I'm going to do this, like you just have to do it. Like, how do you just halfway do this? And so I was just like, okay, babe, like, originally he had something that he had committed to, so he wasn't able to be in the first class. So I was there by myself and I just jumped out and I was like, look, I am just going all in on this. I don't really know what it looks like, but she just basically said the kind of first week challenge was just kind of stop controlling your kids and pretty much any aspect that you can take your hands off of. So I'm just going to do that in all of it. So here we go. And he was just kind of like, okay. And I was like, oh, okay. And so we just kind of went in, and the tornado phase is in fact a real thing. It was, you know, immediately the candy and the sugar and the bedtimes and the, you know, I want to do whatever I want, whenever I want, and all of these things. And especially for the littler ones, that's been our challenge because we have 7 and 8 on our littler side. And then our 14-year-old is our other constant one that's with us. And so the littler ones are really the bedtimes and the candies and snacks and the screen times. That's kind of their hold. And our 14-year-old has more of the riskier stuff where you're looking at, you know, substance abuses where, you know, she has a vape and, you know, she has marijuana, you know, carts that she uses. And, you know, we've seen videos of her drinking alcohol whenever she's been at places and things of that nature, and really just taking control. It just makes me want to cry even thinking about it, because really just taking out the control as a parent has been terrifying, like, especially whenever you have a teenager doing risky behavior. So yeah, that's kind of just where we've started. And we are just kind of, even last night as me and my husband stood in the bathroom as she's asking, you know, at 8 o'clock at night to go hang out at a boy's house and for dad that's really hard for dad, and he's really struggling with that. So he was coming into the bathroom trying to walk, work it out and talk with me through it. And we kind of worked it out where he was able to kind of go back to her and get a plan that worked for the both of them. And she came rolling in, he kind of wanted her to be there at 10, and she kind of came rolling in at 11. But we knew where she was. We had contact information of who she was with, all of these things, which could have been a very different and has been a very different scenario in the past. So I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. Like, it could bring me to tears how grateful I am for finding this approach, because if it wasn't for it, I don't know. I don't know where we would be. I don't know if my oldest one would be alive. I don't know that I would have the relationship with our younger ones that we're starting to generate. And I wouldn't see the voices that my kids have and that they deserve to have, and that I was snuffing out. I was snuffing out because of my own shit that I wasn't willing to see and deal with. And it's just, thank you for the work that you do, because if it wasn't for that, man, we wouldn't be here. So yeah.
This makes me so emotional hearing it. Wait,
So
so you are there three children? There's three children?
technically, there's four of them total. So I have my bio baby that's seven from my previous marriage, and then my husband from his previous marriage has eight, 14, and 18. And
Oh.
so the 18-year-old mainly stays at her mom's house the majority of the time, and we kind of see her pop in here and there. Our 14-year-old is consistently with us right now. Our 8-year-old bounces back and forth with the custody agreement that's in place. And then our 7-year-old, I just recently went to court and got cut full physical and legal custody of her. Her dad did agree to meet me at court and willingly signed the papers, which I was so grateful for. But it was something that needed to happen, just because his alcohol abuse and his instability, just with work and a living situation, just isn't conducive for a kid to be there. And I'm just grateful that he was willing to kind of cooperate in that moment, because in the past he just wouldn't have. So I'm thankful to have her in a safe place physically and legally. And we're just kind of, now it's just me kind of healing that relationship of the control that I did have and that I still continue to kind of project at her because of the stuff that I have to deal with because of my own childhood, but wow, we're working through it just kind of one day at a time. And one thing I am thankful for, especially in my 7-year-old, is she demands to have a voice. And once I told her that her voice mattered and that I was listening to it, she started speaking up, like, "You're controlling me. That doesn't feel good. I don't like the way that you're talking to you. Kara, I blame you," because I gave her one of the phrases from one of the podcasts. And I was like, "Well, if I'm being like that, then you can just, you could use Monster Mommy. Just let me know that I'm being Monster Mommy." And but now she does it sometimes when she's angry, and she's like, "Monster Mommy." And I am being Monster Mommy. And the reason that she's flailing at me the way that she is because I am talking to her in a way that's, I wouldn't allow her to talk to me, treating her in a way that I wouldn't allow her to treat myself or somebody else. And it's just, so she'll, "Monster Mommy." And I'm just like, it makes me angry. And I have to be like, "No, like, you told her that you were going to hear her and you need to shut up and listen."
I know
So,
it's a real ego
yeah.
crushing experience. It's ego crushing. You're a
And my
total
ego is strong, girl.
Well, right. And actually, becoming a parent is a total ego shattering experience anyway. And then you add this on where you're doing something no one else is doing that everyone thinks is crazy. And meanwhile, you're saving your family, but no one else sees it that way.
And just to add, the dynamics that we have just makes it nuts. So
I cannot believe when you describe all the different kids in different custody situation. I mean, oh my God.
Well, and
Amazing.
then the way that my husband and I met, that throws a whole, thing into the mix. And I mean, just the co-parenting dynamic and the dysfunctionality of all of that makes it's a lot. It can be a lot. It's really overwhelming sometimes, for sure.
You know, I think for people who are considering this lifestyle, who might this philosophy, who are listening, is there more you can talk about the transition from chaos and like kids pushing on all the boundaries, they don't want any boundaries, into what makes it so clearly worth it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of important to see where I came from. And I grew up in kind of a really fundamental Christian evangelical Assemblies of God background, like, Sunday, Wednesday, I was in the Christmas program, Easter program, Sunday school, all of that stuff. And there was always something deep inside of me that was like, man, there's something about this Christianity religious structure that just isn't it. So it wasn't until I met my ex-husband in 2014, we got together. I was love bombed by him and married him after 3 months of knowing him, which I don't recommend to anybody. And about 2015, he convinced me that I was a crazy psycho bipolar bitch. So I took FMLA leave off of work, walked into a psychologist's office and said, apparently I'm a crazy psycho bipolar bitch and I need help. So here I am. And we started working and she was like, girl, I see the trauma, we can work on this, that's great, but I'm just not seeing the crazy psycho bipolar. So do you mind if I meet him? And I'm like, absolutely. So we bring him in. And we have a session, and then she messages me, and she's like, after the session, she messages me and she's like, hey, I need you to be at my office, in the morning. I have an appointment open first thing, come in. And so I go in, and I'm like, she's like, hey, I just wanted to see how you felt like this session went and, what you think you're dealing with. And I was like, I know that you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but after a few Googles, which I'm sure you love, I think he's a narcissist. And she was like, oh, good. So I'm not going to tell you anything that you don't already know. And I was like, oh yeah, no, like I know the term, but I don't know what that is. And so that started a long process of me becoming educated. And in this self-exploration of psychology and therapy and all of that, it started really deconstructing my religious background because you can't really take it apart without taking all of it apart. And so, as I'm taking all of it apart, it really starts to rip apart my background of Christianity. And it's like, well, what is this? So, I run into, like Rob Bell's work, which was really kind of soothing to bring me out of kind of Christianity into spirituality. And then I started running into like Caroline Mize and Deja Blue on, podcasts. And then I ran into like Eckhart Tolle's work. And then I started running into like Dolores Cannon, who's a hypnotherapist. And she's been, she did work way back in the 70s and was one of the first hypnotherapists. And all these different people really started deconstructing all of that background for me. And once I started to pull away the religious control of, I was a sinner and I was going to hell, it was like, wait, like I'm inherently a good person. So if that means that I'm inherently a good person, then that means that my kids are inherently good people and they're not trying to manipulate. They're not inherently sinful. They're not inherently doing bad intentionally and need to be saved by the blood and grace of whatever. Like, and once I started to see them as, whole and worthy as I am, and I started to really see that, it was like, man, the way that I'm talking to them and the way that I'm treating them is not okay. I think it's a mirror of the way that I was talked to and the way that I was treated when I was little, and I don't like that. And then I started seeing these blips and these moments of interactions, like with my cousin's daughter, where there was this one moment, because I was corporal punishment, spanking, grounding, I mean, all of it. Like, I would whoop your butt if you lied to me. You're grounded. We take all of your stuff. We'll flip your room like a jail cell to make sure that you don't have anything that you're not supposed to have. Like, I mean, this is my house, my rules. You're a child. You're going to listen. We have structure. Go to bed when you're supposed to go to bed. Do what I ask you to do. I love you. It's
But Alessandra, just pause to just tell me, what was it like for you? I know it sounds like you were an asshole, whatever, but like, what was it like for you to be that kind of a parent?
I mean, at first, like, I guess it gave me like this false sense of like empowerment and control. Like, I was keeping them safe. Like, at my hardest heart, I was trying to keep them safe. I was trying to teach them, hey, I've done this stupid shit, and I don't want you to have to walk the road and do the stupid shit that I do. So, can you please hear me? That I've done it and I've been there. I've been this age, and I just don't want you to have to do it the way that I did it because it was really painful. But I didn't see that in doing it that way, I was projecting my trauma at them. I was projecting my experience at them. And, you know, I think one of my really kind of like shifting moments in my brain was a conversation that I had with my daughter, my 14-year-old, whenever she was at the mental health facility, we went to go visit her. And we had this moment where I was talking to her about, you know, trauma responses or something like that. And she just completely shut down. And when we finally got her to tell us what was going on, she was just like, you just always tell me that, like, that I'm like you, that I am you, that my experience is yours. And it's not like I'm not you. I'm not like you. And I had to hear her. Like, I had to hear her, like, wait, I am doing that. I am projecting my fear of what might happen to you onto you because it happened to me. And I don't want to do that anymore. So, how does this look different? I have to make this look different. If I'm going to love you well, this has to be different. And it was an eye opener, but the majority of the work really is mine, is what I'm realizing. The majority of the work is my broken heart, my inner child, my pain and fear of what might happen to her whenever she's not in my sight, in my control, under my thumb. And she's smart and she's brave and she's strong and she calls me out on my own crap. So, what makes me think that I know better for her than her, who is actually living and walking her own experience? And so, like Vivek says, I want to model and I want to guide, but I don't want to force and control anymore, which is what I was doing. Like, you need to go in this direction because it's the right direction. Like, who the fuck says that I know what the right direction is? Obviously, my direction didn't end up very well for me, or I wouldn't have ended up in the toxic situations and relationships that I was in. So maybe I do need to take a page out of her book and listen.
I do think it's important to bring empathy to parents who really don't know any other options. Like they haven't heard of it. You know, they haven't had a reckoning moment where something else was shown to them. And so they're just stuck in what they learned and what society tells them is parenting. Like we are taught
Yes.
controlling our children is what parenting is, and it makes you a loving parent the more you can control your child. That's what we learn every day.
Well, and
And
Ruthie, until I saw your videos, I didn't know anything different. That's all I knew. That's all I knew. But I was like, there has to be something different. And it wasn't until I saw your videos that I was like, this is it. Like, this is the thing that I've been trying to say.
So you were having those thoughts when the video kind of came up on your feed. You were already thinking that way a little bit, like you were knowing that it wasn't working, what was going on.
I mean, I think I was just in a really dark place. Like, my divorce, you know, was final. I jumped into, you know, my husband is beautiful, but we did kind of jump into a relationship quicker than we probably should have for the health of ourselves and the healing that we needed to have after our last relationship. So really trying to navigate healing ourselves and, helping our kids navigate their trauma through divorces and throwing them into a blended family, right after, big splits. It was a lot. And I found myself in honestly some really dark moments. One moment that I can remember is that the Amazon remote or something was lost for the projector downstairs again. And I was so frustrated and annoyed by it. And I was downstairs looking for it. I think she was six at the time with my 6-year-old. And I was chucking stuff. Like, we have a big basement. And from one end of the basement, there's a toy box at the other end. And I'm chucking toys into the toy box, yelling at her, "I don't understand why you guys can't keep this freaking basement clean. I'm down here constantly looking for crap for you guys." And I mean, imagine being a 6-year-old watching your mom chuck things. And I mean, granted, I'm, justified as a parent cleaning up, throwing stuff in the toy box, but I'm doing it out of rage and frustration and anger. And my 6-year-old is sitting here watching this, terrified. And once I see it all play out and I'm kind of watching it almost from this out of body experience, it was like, hell no, this has got to stop. What in the fuck do you think you're doing? Like, it was like the biggest like shake awake. And I went to my therapist, like, this is what I did and I need help.
Wow.
It started a journey, y'all.
Yeah.
It really did. And it took a while. Like, that was probably maybe 6 months to a year before, maybe 6 months before kind of running into Ruthie's work. And that video just kind of permeated in the back of my head for a while. Like, I watched it several times. I shared it with my husband. I shared it with a few people. And it was the one where you were sitting talking about, allowing your little one to just say fuck and throw the pots and pans on the ground. Because that's so radical for most people, allowing a child to use that vulgar language. And it's like, I've always felt that way. And I've always, in a sense, told my kid, there's no bad words. It's just the way that you use them. Like, I can say fuck, and it's not necessarily a bad word, but if I'm saying fuck you, that's different. So it's, honor the space and the place. How are you using your words? That's what's important. People want to make things bad when it's not. It's just the way that you use them matters. How you honor yourself and the place and the people around you matters. And that's what I want to model, not what I want to teach, not what I want to demand, not what I want to require. What I want to show that I walk and do, so that way it's just natural for them because they've seen it happen so many times in front of their face. Because I'm doing it. Just like I told my 14-year-old whenever she got out of the car saying, whenever dad hits his vape in front of me, it makes it really hard. I was like, then your voice matters and tell him that you need him to stop so that it will help you not be so tempted to do it because your voice matters. We have to hear them. We have to be willing. But then we as adults have to be willing to put ourselves aside and say, yeah, I want to use this, but what my kid needs is for me to walk the talk and not require something that I'm not willing to do myself. And that's where these kids, whenever I have conversations with a lot of them, and I tell them, here's my issue with adults. They look at you and they say, stop talking to me the way that I'm talking to you right now. And their faces, their eyes get this big and they're like, that's it. That's exactly what my mom or my dad or the teachers, that's exactly what they do to me. And I'm like, and it's not okay. I, as an adult, am standing here telling you for the collective adult, I am so sorry and it's not okay. And their faces, their eyes, so many of them. I got text messages from some of my daughter's friends saying Happy Mother's Day. Whenever I come into the gym at the community center, some of them come up and give me hugs. I have them yelling across the gym, "Hey, mom," because they want us involved. They want us there. They want loving and caring adults there. They just don't want the ones that are going to force and control them to be something other than who they are. They don't want that. They want love, not fear. But that's scary. That's scary for adults because then that means that we have to face ourselves. We have to look in the mirror and say, why am I responding this way? Why am I acting this way? What is it about my kids? For me, like last night, what is it about my kids not going to bed when I need them to be asleep? Ruthie, I know you know, when I need them to be asleep because my body is exhausted. What is it? And whenever I, really sit with myself, and Ruthie, I know you can relate, it's because of a lot of really horrible things happen to me at nighttime. And at nighttime, I don't want to be bothered. I want to be able to lay down at a restful, peaceful time, and I want to sleep. I don't want anybody invading my person because that happened so many times at nighttime that I don't want it. So when my kids come in, even my little ones just needing me because they're afraid of a potential storm. And my body is like, why are you freaking out? Like, there's not even a storm happening. Like, what's your problem? Like, just go to sleep. I have to say, I have to see, I wasn't able to do it last night, which is when this event happened. I wasn't able to do it last night. But this morning, I had to say, oh man, my body was doing that thing where it was freaking out. And I told her this morning, I'm so sorry that I wasn't able to meet you last night. I thank God that Daddy was there to hold you, but I am so sorry, baby, that I wasn't able. You deserve so much better for me in that moment, and I didn't give it to you. And I'm working to do better. And she said, it's okay. And I said, it's not okay, but I hope that you can forgive
I had a really, really, really hard night also. I got on
me.
early to tell Kara about how I had a really hard night, which I still need to go apologize for. I haven't had a m moment yet, but I will. But I feel like I think of myself as so self-responsible and so evolved, and I make these videos and I do this podcast. And yet my child will bring me to my knees. Like she really does. Like when I think I have it handled or I think I'm on top of it, she takes me to places that just blow my mind of how unconscious I am, places that are absolutely in the dark, they're in shadow, they're protected, I'm hiding them from myself, and she will make me go there. And I experience it like torture, and I know other people do too. I'm like, no, I dealt with that, and I don't want to remember those things, and I'm good enough now. And she's like, nope. There's a whole bunch of other rooms I'm going to need you to go in. It
Oh
just,
man.
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And when I'm not triggered out of my mind, it's like the best gift in the world. And when I am triggered out of my mind, she's my torturer. She's taking me somewhere I put away a long, long time ago. I never planned to go back there. And I think
Oh, it's so true.
all children are like this. Although I know some people say they have easy kids. I don't know anything about that. I literally have no experience with that whatsoever, and I'm happy for all of the people of Easy Kids. I'm so glad for you all, but I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I have zero knowledge of that concept either. I do not. But
Kara
it's like
doesn't know
I
anything about that either.
And
No, no.
if you look at Dolores, like I don't know, like for me, from going from Christianity to believing in reincarnation is like a big jump over the last few years. But looking at Dolores Cannon's work, whenever they talk about, we sign these soul contracts, I can just imagine me and my daughter sitting at the table, on the spirit plane, signing these contracts, saying, okay, well, this time I'm going to go down and be the mom, and I'm going to play the daughter. And I'm going to make sure that you work out all the things, we're going to work out as much as we can in this life to make sure that we don't have to do it again. And I can only imagine our conversation when we get back to the other side, like, man, I played a good daughter, didn't I? Like I cleared out that karma, huh?
When I see my daughter's pain sometimes, I was telling Kara this. She looks like me when my mother broke my heart. Like she was crying to me last night telling me I have no empathy. I didn't even know she knows what fucking empathy is. And all of a sudden she's like, you have no empathy. Where is your empathy? She kept saying to me last night. And I was like, I think I have empathy. Do I? I was like really against the wall. I wasn't sure. I was trying to hold the boundary, which I don't even know what I think about that right now. But anyway, But she looked like me when I was a kid, and my mother couldn't meet me, and my mother broke my heart like a million times because I had to give up on my mother. And at a very young age, I had to be like, this person is not gonna be there for me. So when Tori is saying those things to me, I'm in a memory. I'm in a memory of my mother breaking my heart, and I'm really scared that I'm breaking her heart. And I have to keep realizing she's not me. She's not having an experience that's anything like what I lived through. It's a completely different universe, but it's really hard to get that.
Yeah, whether
So
you're
crazy.
controlling or you're non-coercive, like you will project onto your kids.
Yeah, and
I
I didn't even
know.
realize that I had the level of work that needed to be done. Like, I mean, I knew I came up from like some messed up backgrounds, but whenever you do like the comparison to like kids getting locked in dog cages and being starved, it's like my dad was just, a narcissist personality and kind of self-seeking. And really, whenever you look at it, it's just because his dad left him at 6 months old and treated him like crap. It's just a perpetuating cycle of all of this stuff. It's not really that I think that either of my parents genuinely wanted to cause harm. I think that it's they didn't even realize that there was work to be done, that there was healing to be done, that the trauma and the molestation and all these different things that happened to them being passed down was obviously going to affect them as parents. I think there was just no knowledge, and there wasn't a whole lot of talk about mental health or any of those things growing up. It was just really starting to become something that was talked about. It wouldn't even be considered mainstream for people to really be talking about mental health. Like, if you were going to a psychologist or a shrink, like, you were crazy, which is now, with the level of awareness that we have, it seems insane. But it's just looking back on the generation before, whenever I kind of set my phone in my grandpa's garage one day and just started talking to him and asking a million questions. And he was telling me about growing up that, the effective form of childcare back then is that as his grandparents that raised him milked cows on their dairy farm, they would hang him as a toddler in like this straitjacket thing and hang him on the wall. And that was how they kept the toddler safe and contained. And it's just, if you could do a brain scan on him while that was happening, I could only imagine what was happening to his poor little brain. But if you try to talk to him about it now, it's like, oh, well, that's just what they had to do. And so if you're not willing or able to see it, then it's really hard to do the work. It's really hard for your kids to do the work because you're not showing them that there is a different way. And I think that was the problem with, me growing up, is that my parents just didn't know that they were hurting as bad as they are. I still don't think, like, even, Ruthie, I shared, some interactions with my mom that I had the other day. And it's like, I just don't think, even still to this day, that they really realize the level of pain that they're holding inside of their bodies that so deeply impacts their ability to have relationship with me as a grown adult still. And even still as a grown adult, I desire that, but I have to set really healthy limits and really healthy boundaries with them because they are choosing to not move forward in a healthy, healing way. And if that's your choice, just like I said, I don't care if you're my mom, I love you, but if you're not moving forward, I can't stay back here to accommodate you. I love you and I want to see you grow, and I'll continue to drop seeds and I'll continue to love you, but that might have to be from a distance if you're not going to move forward. And that goes for my kids too. If you're not going to love them well, then you're not going to be around them. And I had a conversation at the school with some of the people the other day because I had my 14-year-old. I was like, hey, they were telling me we don't have a way to advocate for ourselves to prove what these teachers are saying. We try to pull out our phones to video record and they take our phones or we get in trouble. And so I told them, I was like, hey, start sending me some voice recordings so that way you're not pulling out your phone recording. Like, just keep your phone recording. And so they started sending me some snippets of what these teachers are saying to them. One of these teachers, you know, that didn't even really know my daughter, looked at her whenever she said that she felt like she couldn't trust the admins, that the admins broke her trust. He laughed and said, "I don't think they care about your trust. You're the student." I'm sorry, what? If that's the way that you view the students, or that's the way that you view the administration, or both, that's a huge reflection of a culture issue. Or if that's how you feel about your admin, you know, there's obviously something going on here, but this is a huge reflection that we don't care about their trust. We don't care. Their voices don't matter. I wanted to rip my kids out of public. Like, I want them out so bad. I'm a big brother, big sister. I volunteer. So I go in sometimes as lunch buddy to hang out with some of these kids and to hear the way that some of these adult teachers talk to and about these kids in the hallways to them. It destroys my heart hearing the way that some of these kids are talked to and treated. I just can't.
Have you guys ever seen Vivek's video? He's talking to a group of kids at a school or something. They're doing like an overnight. I don't know if he's volunteering or what. I can't remember. And remember that part? I don't know, Ruthie, if you know what I'm talking about. He's talking to the kids. He's talking about, like, you know, being, you know, working with children non-coercively. And he's like, "We're just equal human beings." And he's talking about the whole philosophy, and they're all just in conversation with him. And they're like, "You know, adults don't talk to us like this. This is such a different experience talking to you, Vivek, versus like other adults in our life." And then there's a teacher that comes in and he says to the whole group, Vivek is there too, something along the lines of like, "You know, you guys really need to settle down. It's getting late. It's time for curfew. You need to go to get to bed," or whatever. And they leave, and Vivek's like, "Okay, sure, just a couple more minutes and we'll wrap up, because like, we're just filming a video here." And the teacher's like, "Okay, but like, you know, you really got to wrap it up." And he's like, "Okay, thank you." And then he leaves, and all the kids kind of, they look like, he looks at them, and he's like, you can see even in that interaction, that adult is talking to me. He's grouping me in with you, and he's talking down to us. He's using his authority over us. He's trying to lecture us. He's trying to shame us into, you know, wrapping up. It's in his tone. It's in his presence. And here I am, an adult, but because I'm with you, I'm now inside of your group, and he's using his power over, and yet I am equal to him. But because I'm now associating with you, it's fucking powerful. Honestly, that video has like never left me when I watched it, because I'm like, what an example of how, yeah, we don't, as people in the system, like the system, the people with power in the system, they don't give a fuck about our trust, our voice, our opinions, our feelings, our bodies, our, you know, none of it. Like, we just don't matter. And in this parenting paradigm, like, we're showing our kids that they do. It's a whole shift in your thinking. And once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Oh gosh, Kara, I don't know how many times I've said those words. Like, once you see this, you can't unsee it. And I don't know how many of those conversations, because my 14-year-old is very social. So a lot of the kids, you know, we have a pretty good basement area, so they have room to kind of hang out and have sleepovers. So a lot of the kids land at our house a lot of the time. And I don't know, since we've started this journey, I don't know how many times we've sat at this little breakfast counter here with the kids that have come in, and, you know, just listening to little comments or having these interactions where my daughter is like, "See, I told you that they parented different." Mm-hmm. Like, "I told you that she would hear what you're saying." Like, these little comments and these little phrases of just these interactions. Like, yeah, I don't, like, exactly what you were saying, like the reactions that those kids had with Vivek, it's those same reactions of these kids. Like, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, holy crap, adults don't treat us like this. Like, I don't understand. And just their eyes, like, it's just their eyes and their faces, like being seen for the first time almost in some of their lives ever. And I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it. And, you know, part of me, my husband tells me that, you know, if I could take all of them in, I would. And I promise you, like, I, half the time that I see these kids and the interactions that they're having, I'm just like, forget it. Like, just come to my house. Like, we'll make room.
Well, I want to transition to talking about risky behavior. I want to say that I have no experience with this. I haven't hit that yet. You know, my daughter's 12 and Kara has a lot of, you know, Kara works with teens. And so she has a lot of experience with this and you do. So I was wondering, this is really controversial. People get really, really triggered about it. So I want to go into it. I want to hear the two of you sort of go into it and I want to learn about it.
I've had several videos that I've shared on my TikTok, just kind of the journey that of my non-coercive journey, because I wanted to document it for myself more so for anybody else. I wanted to hold myself accountable because I felt like it was so important for me to do this that I was like, man, if I make it public, if I make it out there where I'm starting this, then this is something that I really have to hold myself accountable for. So I just forced myself to put it out there, even though it was kind of really uncomfortable. And we just have so many dynamics because our co-parenting situation is really rough. My 14-year-old has a really rough relationship with her mom, and that she's just a completely different parent than we are. And in my opinion, that side is just a really toxic environment. And so because of, I think, a combination of the divorce, you know, my husband was married to her for 15 years. And then they split and had probably been split for maybe 6 months. And in 2000, and so back up. So in 2019, my ex-husband and I jumped into a marriage class that we had some mutual, you know, we had some mutual friends. And I met, you know, Mario and Shanna at the marriage class. And, you know, we all became friends through the marriage class. And then we kind of all went our separate ways after the marriage class. And they ended up splitting. And then whenever I went to go split with my husband, I reached out to Mario and was like, hey, because he was the similar one in the relationship where he was the one that got lied to and manipulated and all of those things. So whenever I went and hired a lawyer to file for divorce, I reached out and was like, hey, how are things going? How did you survive? And we kind of started talking and reconnected. And that's kind of how our relationship started. So we knew each other kind of from the beginning, which really set off a jumping point for his ex to make it where I was the homewrecker and I was destroying everything and she had done nothing wrong and all of these things. So because, you know, at 11, 12, 13, you're getting fed all these different stories of being told like, that's not how it happened. This is how it happened and back and forth. It started causing a lot of pain in her. I mean, her parents just split up. The only thing that she's ever known, you know, she feels like both of her parents are lying to her because nobody seems to be telling the same story. Here I am in the middle of it. And, you know, I'm supposed to be, you know, fun, but then I'm like this kind of controlling parent, just like her dad. And so I'm not really fun. And so I really am probably public enemy number one as well, like her mom is saying. And so then, you know, the substances started, she kind of lives in a rougher area in Southwest Missouri where we're at. She's in kind of a rougher area up in Springfield where her mom lives. And she got introduced to some substances and started, you know, using like a cart, a marijuana vape, and started using nicotine vapes that she was able to get access to through school or friends or, you know, older sibling, whatever it might be in that case that she got it from. And we start finding out that these things are happening. They start coming over to our house and we're finding them. So we're confiscating the vapes. And then she starts to run away. And, you know, then we start to see, you know, some of the self-harm happening. And so we're like, what do we do? There we start having, and then we get into this instance where she's at a park and there was a fight that she was watching. The police ask her to take a seat. She tells them that she doesn't have to because she wasn't involved. She goes to leave the area. They tell her no. She shoves them off and she proceeds to leave. They tase her and it turns into this whole thing. And we end up going into, like, we were already in a diversionary program, kind of trying to help her get back on some type of healthy track, because that's kind of what the school was pushing us towards, is like, try the diversionary program and see if this helps. So we started there. So then that landed us on informal probation, this interaction with the police. So then we go to informal probation, and then she's failing the drug test and having behavioral issues. So then that puts her into what's called a C-STAR program, which is like an inpatient kind of drug rehab program. So she ends up in the drug rehab program. She gets kicked out of there because somebody makes a comment about, you know, the fact that her, at least their parents, you know, at least their parents love them, and, you know, her parents don't love her. And so she doesn't physically react, which is what she normally would do, is actually a really good step in the right direction for her. But she verbally threatens, and that's enough to get you kicked out of that program because there can't be any physical violence. So then we come back and we try to do it from home. And then there's an interaction with mom over fucking potatoes or some dumb shit. And it turns into, she says that, you know, she wasn't planning to or making any type of attempt or whatever, but she just wrote on a piece of paper, you know, if I die, I die. And said, I guess, that she had taken some pills, but she had really only taken a couple aspirin. But it's enough to prompt, you know, social services to kind of come in, and then they put her into a residential mental health facility for a little while. Then that whole thing happened. And then we had, you know, we had this interaction that I share, I talk about a couple times on my TikTok, with her there and another kid in the room, and just how he shares with me how this facility, like, if basically he's like, if your kids are suicidal, like, don't send them here. It's not going to help them. All they care about is behavior modification. Like, they don't care about me as a human. That I had that interaction with him, and that same interaction where she told me, like, I'm not you. Stop telling me that I'm you. Like, that was all in one room at one time. So I walked out of that room bawling. And whenever we got her home, whenever we finally got to check her out of that place, so whenever she came home, we were already in it. And we were like, look, this is what we've done as you were kind of gone. And this is what it looks like. I'm not providing you anything, because I right now, I just can't. I can't get myself to break a law to help you have something illegal. I can't do that. But I'm not going to take it from you. And it breaks my heart. You know, I hate seeing you hurt yourself. I hate seeing you use substances. But what the fuck else are you supposed to do? Nobody taught you anything else. How are you supposed to have skills if nobody taught them or modeled them for you? And they damn sure weren't teaching them or modeling them for you. Like, and I tell my husband, I'm sorry. That's one of the conversations I had with him last night. I'm sorry, but you guys drug her through hell for 11 years, and you expect her now to be able to communicate and make plans a couple days in advance? No, she hasn't had the time to build up those skills. You can't expect that from her when you didn't give her the foundation. You didn't lay it for her. And so, you know, we just told her, you know, we're ripping it all down, and we're not going to control you anymore. Wow. And you're free. You're free to have a voice. And so then I got a code word with her, which she still doesn't use very often. I kind of use it more so, but whatever there's something that she doesn't like or feels gross to her, or she doesn't want to have the conversation anymore. She just says red, 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 red. And I know, I just like, you just read me and I'll shut up. And even whenever I'm talking to her, I'll be having interactions and I'll be telling her, you know, sharing my heart with her, and in the middle of it. And I'll say, and if you need to read me right now, read me, and I will shut up. I will shut the hell up right now. And you just tell me and I'll do it. And she's like, no, keep talking. Like, I want to hear it. And then there'll be times that she'll read me and I have to hear it. But, you know, if the vape is the substitute for her wanting to literally unalive herself, like, I'm sorry, you can yell at me in my TikTok comments all you want, boo. By all means, continue to go ham. But I promise you, the little bit of damage that is happening to her lungs right now versus burning her up and putting her in a box because she doesn't want to be in a casket. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it. I would much rather support her and honor her and walk her through this substance abuse that she has right now. So that by the time she's my age, she's already kicked it and been past that, than to push her away to make her feel like her voice isn't valid, that her experience isn't valid, that it is okay that nobody gave her skills and it's our fault and we need to own up.
Yeah, I mean, from you and I talking recently and texting and stuff, it's going really well in terms of the closeness. Like, she is sharing her feelings. She comes to you. She asks for help. She talks about her struggle with the vape. She asks for help with the vape. I mean, can you just say more about what's going well about this? You took the controls off, and now what's happening?
Yeah. I mean, it's so beautiful because, like, even today, whenever we were talking about, you know, her vaping on the way to school, she's like, I don't even have a vape. Like, I'll hit my friends. But she hasn't made an effort to get one, and she can. Like, and I mean, honestly, like, to be completely honest with you, like, she's learned how to hustle. She's learned that, you know, people will provide her with stuff and she can sell it for a little bit more, and then she'll have money to do whatever. I mean, and she's figured that out, that she can do that. And so she's like, she has money, and I'm like, where are you getting this money from? And then I figured, she told me that that's what she's doing, is that she'll get a hold of stuff and then she'll sell it and have money left over or whatever. And so I'm like, okay, so like, she has the money to get it. She has access and she can get it. But right now she's choosing not to. And some of the relationships, even that she's in right now, like one of the kids that she's kind of hanging out with and has an interest with, she was telling me about, she's like, he's so athletic. He just wants me to be outside all the time, and he won't let me smoke weed around him. And you know, just all of this stuff. But I mean, she's just openly just sharing this stuff with me. Like, I'm not having to ask, I'm not having to probe, like, I'm not coming for this information. Like, she just brings it to me. You know, I'll ask questions, and if she doesn't want to share it, then she won't share it. But I mean, she's coming and saying, hey, I want to go here, I want to go there. Like, we had one sneak out incident because she honestly believed that we wouldn't allow her to go do whatever it was. And so she snuck out. And the conversation that I had with her, you know, the next morning was like, yo, I think what I'm more annoyed about is that I could have slept for 3 more hours. And they looked at me and I was like, if you guys would have just communicated with me and let me know what your plans were and where you were going to be, you know, I would have felt okay. I was like, I had the bubble guts because I was so anxious because you guys didn't tell me what was going on, that I had the bubble guts instead of me being able to just sleep and know at, you know, 4:30 in the morning or 5 or whenever you guys were going to want to be picked up and I can set my alarm and just come get you. I was up from 2 o'clock in the morning until now, after I picked you guys up, you know, and took a nap. Now I'm sitting here having this conversation with you guys exhausted whenever I could have slept. And so granted, they tested it immediately the next night and said, okay, so we want to go here and this is where we want to go and this is what time we want to be picked up. And we didn't love the times, but we were able to accommodate it. It was the weekend. We didn't have anything really going on and we were able to accommodate it, even though we didn't love the times, but we accommodated and we were fine. And then there was another night recently that it was like, hey, you know, can I go over to so-and-so's house? And I'm like, babe, we got this and that going on tonight. Like, is there another night? Yep. No problems. Didn't have any issues overnight. Like, I mean, because we're willing, she could see that I'm willing to work with her. Mm-hmm. And I continue whenever I do tell her no, you know, or we're having to say no or whatever. It's like, hey, you know, I hope you see that I am willing to work with you the majority of the times if I'm able. This just isn't one of those times. And she's like, I know, I see it. And it's just the connection. Like, even yesterday, Mother's Day was yesterday, and it was so hard for her because her mom, that relationship, she still shunned from her mom. So she wasn't, she didn't go over there because she felt like her mom just wanted her over there to kind of appease her. And so, but we're sitting at breakfast, you know, and I can tell, you know, we woke her up early because my mom wanted to go to breakfast early, but she rolled out of bed and came with us. And there was this moment sitting, sitting at the restaurant that she reaches over and she just locks fingers with me and holds my hand, just sitting at the table and just holds it. And girls, can I tell you that I just about died as a mom because I just didn't ever see that moment happening with her, given the dynamic that we were in, given the impossibility of the dynamics that we were in and what we were up against, for her to just lock her fingers with me and just hold it. And for me to just let her know, you know, just in that moment with no words, but like, I fucking got you. And you might not be my blood, but you're my baby and you will forever be, like, I've got you. That moment was everything for me. And I wish I would have known it sooner, but I would switch 1,000 times over. And the amount of kids in my comment section, like, you're my TikTok mom. I wish I had this. I wish my mom was like this. I wish that my parents understood. I wish that they would hear me. Like, it breaks my heart because these kids want us involved. They want us there. They want us next to them. But the only reason that they push us away is because they can feel in the deepest parts of their souls that what we are giving to them is unhealed trauma. It's not love.
Alessandra, I just absolutely love how you express yourself. I swear to God, I'm just like, I could just listen to you for hours. What? Yeah. How long have you been doing this non-coercive thing?
Shit, Rithia, when we started class, when did we take that class?
I remember.
Maybe three or 4 months ago. Hmm. I mean, that's it. I mean, it really that's, went from, so
in three,
you know.
In 3 to 4 months, you have changed the relationship with all of your children. You've completely 180 changed it.
Yes. I mean, there is so much work to be done. And the thing that comes in the way is me. Yeah. I'm the fucking problem. I talk to my kids like shit. I'm like, just go to bed. Like, just eat the food. Like, I just made this food. Like, we have leftovers. Why can't you just eat that instead of me having to make all this other food? Like, but I'm the fucking problem. That's my fucking problem. And I'm having to have that conversation with my husband all the time. How you feel about this moment is the problem. It's not what they're wanting to do. Mm-hmm. How I feel about this moment is the problem. It's not what they're wanting to do. So I need to deal with my fear, my frustration, my pain, whatever it is that's dumping out. I need to deal with it. And then I need to look my kid in the eye and say, thank you, sweet baby, for holding up a mirror to my shitty behavior. Like, how do I, can I just get on the ground and worship you at your feet, child? Because really we should take a page out of Jesus's book and really all the spiritual teachers, but that's just the reference that I have from growing up. But really all the spiritual teachers are like, listen to these kids, because the kids are the ones that have it right. Mm-hmm. Like, the kids are the one that come with us to this pure divine essence. It's like they just left the spirit plane, so they're still connected with this pure divine source essence energy, and they'll dump it on us if we'll allow it, but we're too busy snuffing it out with our adult grossness. And I just and then therapy is so expensive. Like, how do we rip down a whole structure? Like, because the whole corporate structure needs to come down. The whole school system structure needs to come down. Like, we need to rip the whole thing apart and start over. Because it's like, even the teachers are like, well, I can't attend to this student when I have so many people in a classroom. It's like, then why do we have our kids in classrooms that aren't productive for them? If we know it's not productive, why are we doing it? Mm-hmm, it's just, yeah. It's the same thing with parents. If we know that this is harming the relationship, if we can see the pushback, why are we doing it? Why are we continuing to beat our heads against the wall?
I was just thinking, like, teenagers will say this shit to you, right? You can go into a classroom and find, if there's 30 kids, you'll find 10, maybe 15 of them who think like this. I swear to God, because I've been in those classrooms. You can have debates about the system, talk about healthcare, injustices, oppression, big issues like this, how parents treat kids. I mean, you'll have half the class shouting at you in agreement. So it's getting...
Well, you get to my age, it's worse.
Right, right. But it's hilarious because I'm 30, right? I'm 30 years old. Like, I am very young. I'm very new to this life still in the grand scope if I'm going to live, you know, to old age, which I hope I do. Because I just think about my brother who died at 35 and I'm like, he was a kid, right? So I'm still so young. I'm surrounded by young people. I'm surrounded by young parents. My friends are all in their mid 30s or early 30s with young children. And I'm the only one. I'm the only one that thinks about it like this because they all really believe in the system that broke them too. Because they were 15 thinking like this. So what we're saying about kids is, Ray, you're the only one in your age group.
But I have a couple of friends who are trying very hard.
Well, y'all, whenever I met my husband, he was like more ingrained in like fundamental Christianity than I was. Like I was already, you know, deconstructing. I started my deconstruction in 2018. My husband was still like, you have to be saved by accepting, confessing, and believing in Jesus and all this stuff. So whenever I kind of started introducing the, you know, maybe that's not a thing, maybe. And I just kind of started, you know, spoon feeding him a little bit to see him, you know, to see him rip that structure down. And there's so, especially here, I'm in the Bible Belt. I'm in Missouri in the Bible Belt. And so you get, you know, there's a debate right now going on with one of the big churches, one of the mega churches in the area over some guy that they hired that's like, supposedly he was supposed to be a Christian, but he did some pole dancing thing. And it's just like this huge debate. And they're just sitting here like just hours and hours of this content keep popping up on my newsfeed. And I'm like, kids are legitimately getting decimated right now.
Yeah.
And this is the conversation that you're having, like, and in the name of Jesus, what is
it
that?
It must be so weird. Hard to live right there.
Well, and the racism, like the amount of racism that my daughter experiences in the school, because we're in a smaller kind of subdivision south of like the main city here, which is still smaller because like the bigger cities are like St. Louis and Kansas City up north, and we're kind of southern Missouri. And so we're in a smaller city. And so she's like a handful or two maybe of mixed kids in the entire school. And so we experience a lot of racism, you know, and it's just my daughter, my 7-year-old is conscious and aware of it. She'll come home from school like, why do none of the teachers look like me? Bawling. But mommy, why do none of the teachers look like me? There's nobody in my class that looks like me. Like, I just want to have somebody that makes me feel like I belong. And it's my 7-year-old, like, and to sit here and say that these kids don't have anything to offer. Oh, they're just 7. Like they don't know anything. What? Like my 7-year-old is coming to me with these deep gut wrenching things that she can feel in the deepest parts of her. And you're telling me that she doesn't have anything to offer. Stop it. Like my 14-year-old will call me out and be like, hey, whenever dad says that you do that critical thing to him where he feels like you cut him down, you were just doing it. And I'm like, I need you to tell me that more and call me out so that I can see myself when I can't see myself.
Yeah.
Because your eyes can see me and your eyes are a lot clearer than mine because I've had years of trauma and programming and all of these things. So please help me undo because really you do know.
I don't know. Do you have advice, Alessandra?
For me, as starting, it was like, what's practical to start? Mm-hmm. If I'm a parent watching this, how do I start what the hell this is? Like, what is
it's a great question? Because I worry about that. Like, you know, you were somebody who followed Ruthia for a while or watched her content or whatever. So yeah, like when you were in that like purgatory place, you're not in it yet. You're thinking about it. It's like, what do you tell parents who are there who are like, okay, I hear your podcast, but like, I still don't fucking get this. And I really feel like there's so many barriers to actually doing this. And I have questions. What do you tell them?
Yeah, I think if you are a parent that is in a place that you're really wanting to start this, I think the first thing that I would say is that you really have to commit. Like, if you, and what you're committing to is really honoring and loving yourself well, because that just trickles down to the kids, is really what it is. That it's really loving ourselves well and seeing and finding all of those places that we aren't meeting the commitments that we are asking ourselves to make for ourselves. Whether it be, you know, I want to journal 5 minutes a day. I want to get up and do this exercise. I want to take this walk. I want to go on, you know, this many nature adventures over the next X amount of time. You know, it's those little commitments that we say that we're going to do to better ourselves, to heal ourselves, to visit that inner child, that we have to take those steps in allowing our kids to have a voice. And that, I think, is the hardest thing. I think if you're jumping into that, your child having a voice is going to be one of the hardest things that you will probably ever experience in your life, because they are going, they have shoved down so much pain, so much stuff that we have just heaped on them, that whenever you give them the opportunity to finally start to let it out, it comes out.
You know, last night my daughter said to me, "Why are you acting this way?" And I said, "Honey, I'm triggered." Like, I've taught her this word. I'm triggered. I'm upset about something that has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. I've taught her that word. And whenever I say it, she'll go, "Okay." Because then she can know it's me. It's about me and it's not about her. Yeah. Even if I can't not be triggered and I can't do any better, just a word that signifies that it's my problem. And we both know it.
And that was one thing that I told my 14-year-old whenever we were having the, you know, sneak out incident. I told her, I was like, part of the reason this is really hard for me is because I've kind of told you my history and, you know, where my heart has kind of been broken. And so whenever you lie or you're dishonest, you know how that happens. And she's kind of shaking her head. You're like, you know how that impacts and how it's hard for me to have relationship whenever I don't feel like people are honest or I can trust them to be open with me. And she was shaking her head because she knew, and she was willing to really understand and empathize with the experiences that I had shared with her. And in that moment, it was beautiful. Her friend was standing here, like, in complete, she's the one that called me mom after and has since, but she was standing here just kind of like, didn't even sit down, because it was almost like she was in such awe and shock of the conversation that we were having, not really understanding. And it was just really kind of cool to see, and then continue to sit and have an interaction with her. And man, it's just so beautiful whenever you really allow these kids to be who they are. Like, you really, and I think that's what's so crazy about us as adults, is that like, we are snuffing out literal life force energy. Yeah. Like, whenever we allow these kids to be who they are and really rock the life that they are supposed to have, they shake the literal foundations of everything. And I think that's part of the reason that we snuff them out, is because I think it is that they start shaking the foundation and we're like, oh, that doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. But like, how else do you grow other than shaking it up? Like, we've got to hear these kids. Their voices are so impactful and so important and so powerful. I even feel myself kind of pushing back when people are like, well, kids aren't equals. And I'm like, why not? Mm-hmm. Like, why not? Why not? Who told you that? And why? That's what, like, why? And we need to dismantle that, because what is it about them that makes them not worthy to be an equal? It's gonna
you
be-
are doing amazing.
You are doing amazing. I cannot believe it's been like 3 or 4 months. It's absolute unbelievable.
Yeah, it has. I'm so thankful. Thank you
and
so
I
much.
I really love, you know, following along and hearing how it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And this is,
I plan to continue to share, as much as.
this is going to help so many people. This podcast is going to help so many people. It really is. It
Yeah, I
really is.
hope so. I
There
hope that
was.
there's a lot of people that jump on. Yeah, well, thank you guys so much for the
Thank
opportunity to just be a
you.
part.
Yeah, thank you so
Thank
much,
you so
Alessandra.
much.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rithia Lee, at www.rithia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rithia Lee, on Instagram at Rithia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rithia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rithia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us, to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.